you, ladies and gentlemen, for your warm reception, but more importantly, for your support for the Natural Resources Council, and joining with all of us today in honoring Brownie Carson, 20 years of leadership. I asked Brownie if he were retiring, because these events are usually held in connection with a retirement. He said no. I told him I commend it to him, because I have retired three times, and I found that it leads to other and more interesting things, Brownie, and I think you could carry the battle that you've waged here in Maine for 20 years across the nation and across the globe, because the principles that you've stood for, the causes for which you've advocated here in Maine, important as they are to us, are truly national and now worldwide issues. And one of the reasons I wanted to come here today was to thank all of you for what you've done, thank the members of this organization and Brownie personally for the support and help they gave me during my years in the Senate, but also to encourage you to continue to grow, to project your voice over an even wider range of issues and area, because in many respects, despite the enormous gains that have been made in awareness and in protection, we're going backward in this country and in this world in dealing with environmental issues. First, the progress. I grew up in Waterville on the banks of the Kennebec River. My mother was a factory worker, my father was a janitor, and in those days, living near the river was the cheapest place to live because everyone wanted to get away from it. It seems almost incredible when you think about real estate location today, but my father always regarded as one of his greatest accomplishments that he saved up enough money to buy a small house about 200 yards away from the river. Because the Kennebec River then was a stinking open sewer, filled with pollutants, covered with scum. No one would have dreamed of boating, fishing, swimming, or having anything to do with the river but to get away from it. Back then, that was the case with more than 85% of our nation's waterways, and the air was heavily polluted. Because of Ed Muskie, who in my judgment was the greatest environmental legislator in our nation's history, the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act became law. As a young man, I had the privilege of working with Senator Muskie and working on those laws, and as a result of that, the numbers have been reversed. About 85% of our waters are now clean, and real estate along the Kennebec River is much more desirable. A reverse migration is occurring. And the Kennebec River, of course, can now be used in many ways which was not possible in my youth. That is true of waters all across our state and our country. But as the pressures of population growth, industrialization, increased and more difficult forms of pollution to combat continue to rise, and as we have a national administration that is truly committed to turning back the clock on environmental protection, the challenges you and all of us who care about the environment now face are as great or greater, although different, than they were in Ed Muskie's day. I spent several years in the Senate with a lot of help from Brownie and many people here trying to write the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. It was one of the most difficult legislative battles of an entire decade, and we finally enacted a strong law. And now, to my astonishment, the astonishment of many others, this administration is pursuing a policy which has as its specific objective, although you couldn't tell it by the words they use, to reverse the progress made by the adoption of the Clean Air Act and to change it dramatically. It would take us back 30 years if the policies of the Bush administration became law with respect to the Clean Air Act. They call it the Clear Skies Proposal in an Orwellian use of words that is really unmatched in our modern history. I encourage you all to join that effort in opposition to the thrust of the proposals made by the administration, and to help all of us who care about keeping our air and water clean to resist those efforts. Brownie was involved in that effort, and I must say was not only very helpful on a substantive basis, but was personally supportive of me. I was the principal author of the bill. It took several years to enact. It was an extremely bitter and difficult fight. And because I wasn't able to produce a bill that was 100% of whatever environmental group in the country supported, many of them turned on me and on other supporters of the bill and harshly attacked us on grounds of selling out. I needed friends then who had the credibility to stand up and say that what we were doing was the right thing. And Brownie was one of the few who was willing to do that, for which I will be forever grateful. We then passed a bill, and ironically, all those same organizations the next year asked me to come and give me the award as Man of the Year for having passed the best Clean Air Act in many years and so forth. It was a very good and instructive experience for me. There was one other experience that Brownie may not recall because it was in his early years. When I went to the Senate, I was surprised to learn that there was no national law regarding oil spills and cleanup and protection. Four states had such laws, Maine being one of them. Here, a law was enacted primarily because Portland had been a major oil port receiving crude oil that went through a pipeline to Montreal, which served the needs of the urban part of Quebec and other eastern Canadian cities. That's now all changed, of course, and the pipeline is used in reverse to bring natural gas from Canada to the United States. But there was a heavy tanker traffic in and out of Portland. So I introduced a bill to establish for the first time a national program of prevention and cleanup on oil spills. President Reagan was in office then. He opposed it. The oil industry opposed it, as did the opposition party. And as a result, I couldn't get a hearing in the Environmental Committee on my bill. I served on that committee, and I couldn't get the committee to even hold a hearing on my bill. I introduced the bill every year that I served in the Senate. And I talked to Brownie about it when he came on board here in 84, discussions which he may well have forgotten because so much else has happened in his lifetime and mine. And we kept at it despite the discouragement of repeated failure. And then in one of those unexpected dramatic events that none of us could have foreseen, the Exxon Valdez had a spill in Prince William Sound in Alaska. And within weeks, the bill passed the Senate unanimously, the House passed it, and President Reagan had a nice signing ceremony down at the White House saying how great it was that we now had the first legislation to protect against oil spills. I cite that as an encouragement to persist if the cause is right, even when it seems hopeless, even when it seems as though you can't succeed, and even though you repeatedly run into the stone wall of public indifference or considered opposition by entrenched groups. Because ultimately, for one reason or another, the right will prevail, and the American people, once informed and aroused, will without a doubt in my mind do the right thing. That's what happened on that legislation, And I thank very much Brownie again personally and the Natural Resources Council for the continued support that they provided. If you need anything in this effort to protect our environment, you need perseverance and patience. You need the ability not to be deterred by strong opposition, not to be discouraged by temporary defeat, never to give up the fight, and to keep it going. Those are the characteristics that come to my mind when I think of Brownie and I think of the Natural Resources Council. The other is the willingness to engage in reasonable dialogue, the willingness to accept the old admonition that don't always think of yourself as 100% right and your enemy is 100% wrong. I've never learned anything in my life when I was speaking. Everything I've learned in life, I've learned when I was either listening or reading. And so I found this organization to be unique among advocacy organizations in that it is willing to engage in a reasonable dialogue, to reconsider positions based on changing or new evidence, to take positions that are strong, principled, and yet reasonable, and to understand the realities of the political process and the constant pressures and tensions that elected officials face in making the decisions that they must. I'm sure there are some elected officials here today, and they know better than I, because I'm no longer in that position, that there is a constant stress between meeting the needs of your immediate constituency and those of the larger society. The true task of leadership is to reconcile those in a way that is positive and constructive for the entire society. I believe that more than most, the Natural Resources Council has been able to achieve that realistic balance. I thank you for that. I thank you for all of the support that you've done, and I thank you very much, especially for choosing and continuing as your leader, someone who has ability, intelligence, patience, perseverance, and a very powerful sort of sincere advocacy that advances the causes in the right way for the right reasons. Brownie, thank you very much for your support over the years. I want to also, before I leave and have Brownie come up and say a few words, thank Shelley for her kind words and also for the tremendous contribution she made. She was indeed one of the most effective environmental legislators in our state in the many years that she served in the Maine House and Senate, and continues now as a national leader on a lot of issues that are important to you and to all Americans. Shelley, thank you very much for your leadership. I conclude, as I began, by thanking all of you for your support and friendship over the many years that I served in the Senate and since, and I encourage you, keep up the fight. Thank you very much.